Hello, I hope you're all coping during these unusual times. I'm going to tell you a story. It's a paraphrase from one well-known Bible story. But bear with me. It's a time of national distress, a real threat to life as they knew it, to their livelihood as nomads. The economy in free fall. And Jacob the father had heard from a passing stranger that in this time of a disastrous famine, grain was available in Egypt. He arranged for his 10 sons to travel to Egypt to buy food, Benjamin the youngest being kept at home. The city in Egypt was heaving with people, from the Euphrates to the Red Sea, anxious travellers crowded in to buy grain. The congested city with animals tethered under shady trees or jostling at drinking troughs refilled by slaves was the centre of the noisy commerce. The food administration centre was located near the palace gardens, a huge hall with a large shady portico in which crowds of expectant people awaited their turn in the queue. The queue of anxious travellers stretched right out and down the main thoroughfare, where it was joined by Jacob's sons. A long wait in the burning sun before they entered the large hall, where a long row of tables, each with two officials, awaited the crowd. Behind them stood interpreters, available if requested to deal with the myriad of languages represented from the surrounding countries. As travellers entered, details were taken and sales agreed. It was noted that the prices for foreigners was noticeably higher than that for the local Egyptians. A scrap of papyrus would be issued, duly stamped and endorsed by the official, and this would be offered across at the supply centre on the other side of the main square. Towards the rear of this great hall sat the chief administrator with his aides. Seated on a raised dais, they pored over papyrus scrolls, checking on the grain supply from Goshen in the Nile Delta, right down south to Thebes and beyond. Caravans of supply animals converged on the city, depositing their loads and then returning to the storage granaries for more. The problems of supply and demands were unexpectedly interrupted above the general hum of voices in that hall by a word or phrase carried over to the chief administrator at his work. The language of his mother country suddenly stops the boss. Startled, he looks up, and to his amazement, after 13 years of separation, he recognizes his brothers. He approaches them, and through an interpreter, he questions them closely about their country and family. They bow down before him as this authority figure speaks and interrogates them. They do not recognize this man speaking Egyptian, dressed as an Egyptian, and accusing them of being spies. The Bible tells us that he, Joseph, imprisoned them for 3 days and holds Simeon as an hostage. They return home with grain and find their money returned in their sacks. We do not know how long it was before they had to return to Egypt. This time they returned with Benjamin, because this figure, Joseph, had insisted that the youngest turn up as well. And against their father's wishes, he returns, but Judas himself guaranteed his safety. Joseph's steward takes them to Joseph's house. And on Joseph's return from work, the 10 brothers present him with the gifts brought from home. Joseph inquires about the father and is deeply moved when he sees Benjamin, his younger brother. They dine with Joseph. They are seated in order of their ages, and to their amazement, they also see Benjamin with portion 5 times the rest. They return home, and to their amazement, they are stopped on the road, and the silver cup of Joseph is found in the sack of Benjamin, and they are returned all of them returned to Egypt. The climax of the story, after Benjamin was threatened to be made a slave and the brothers plead with him for leniency, Joseph could no longer contain himself. Can you imagine the scene? The great hall, and Joseph commands his aides, the guards, the stewards to leave, and suddenly he announces in his mother's tongue, "I am Joseph. Is my father still living?" Can you imagine the consternation, the stunned silence, the terror of the brothers? A show trial, a public hanging, an impalement outside the city walls. They are filled with dread. And then Joseph says, "Listen, I am Joseph, your brother, you sold into Egypt. And now don't be distressed, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. To put it another way, you meant it for harm, but God meant it for good." This is the great lesson of this story, that God can use negative experiences to achieve his purpose. In Ephesians 1, verse 11, it says, "He works out everything in conformity with the purpose of his will." God's plans cannot be frustrated by events. He uses flawed people, our blunderings, our mistakes, the irrational decisions of rulers of nations, the disasters of humanity, and yet he achieves his purposes. If we go through the events of Joseph's family, we find that Father Jacob, he took Esau's birthright when he persuaded his brother to let him have it for a plate of stew. He further deceived his father Isaac when he pretended to be Esau and took Esau's blessing from his dying fathers. He was foolish in that he showed favoritism to Joseph above his brothers and started a chain of events which we now know about. Joseph, the favorite son, a proud and haughty teenager, a life where he apparently stayed around the family home and brought negative reports to father about his brothers when they were minding the sheep. No wonder they hated him. He received two dreams which were real and significant enough for him to create a real personal impact. He didn't have enough sense or wisdom to keep them to himself, but told his brothers and parents. And this intensified the brothers' hatred of him. Joseph finds himself rejected by his brothers. He sits in the dried up well when he's been grabbed and his coat of many colours taken off him. And here he sits in his underpants and realises the privileged life of ease he had has gone. These things he took for granted had suddenly been removed. For the first time, he was experiencing rejection. And then sold to the Ishmaelites, tethered to the back of a camel, walking the way to Egypt, suffering humiliation in the slave market, being poked and prodded, having his teeth examined before Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, buys him. In Potiphar's house, we are told, God blessed him. I'm not sure if Joseph realized that God was still with him, but certainly we know that he learned the customs and the language of the Egyptians. And then, of course, when Potiphar's wife, this flirtatious, adulterous woman, who was wanting a toy boy, wanted him to go to bed with her, he refuses. He says, "No, it would be not appropriate for to dishonour my master in this way. And also, it would be a sin against God." His upbringing, his religious upbringing, he remembers Jehovah. And then, of course, falsely accused and in prison. But it's not just an ordinary prison. He is not put in a dungeon and forgotten about. Again, he's in a prison where the prisoners of Pharaoh himself are imprisoned. He becomes the passman in Perth prison. Prisoners who behave themselves, who follow the prison code and look after themselves and keep themselves healthy and well and well behaved, become passmen. And Joseph became a passman in the prison. God blessed him at his work. And one day, of course, from Pharaoh's court, the cupbearer and the baker were thrown into prison. And here he exercises his God-given gift of interpretation. And he tells the cupbearer that he will be restored to his place in Pharaoh's household, the baker, of course, being executed. But as the cupbearer goes out the door, Pharaoh says, "Remember, remember me." But of course, the cupbearer forgets. And for 2 years, Joseph had to remind himself of patience. He had to learn patience. He had to recognize that God's purpose was not going to be fulfilled until he had fully learned the lessons. What it was to be rejected. What it was to be humiliated. What it was to be wrongly accused. You know, Christ suffered in that same way later on, which led to his crucifixion. And Joseph was being prepared for high office in these trials. These trials were certainly not something that he enjoyed. He endured them, but recognized ultimately, when he was indeed put into high office, that he had been shaped during this process. I wonder how we feel about these things. God gave Joseph a place of honour, and Joseph was in a position where he ultimately, who could save his family, his brothers, from their nomadic lifestyle, and had them brought to Egypt to start a new life. Let's look at the situation through Joseph. Jacob, of course, who was called Israel when he wrestled with God at the brook Jacob. They were brought and settled in Egypt. In turn, the children of Israel, the children of Jacob, endured slavery until a new Pharaoh ultimately faced Moses, and they were released to enter the promised land. In all that Joseph suffered, God was there. Perhaps almost certainly God was not aware that God was with him initially, but perhaps towards the end, as he learned some of these hard lessons, he realized that he was more close to God, the God of his fathers. In our time of national crisis, with the coronavirus causing havoc, what is your reaction? The fear, the uncertainty, or realizing that God is still with you? In this time of trouble, what is God doing in your life? In Isaiah 43, it says, "Fear not, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name. You are mine." And then it says, "When you pass through the waters," not "if you pass through the waters." "When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And when you pass through the rivers, they will not sweep you away. When you walk through the fire, you will not be burned. The flames will not set you ablaze. For I am the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, your Saviour." In our troubled world, where Jesus himself warns us of its imperfections because of man's sin, we know that he is with us in all of our trouble. He doesn't cause it, nor is he to blame, but he is with us in the storm. What lessons have we learned, or are we learning? I think we've got to recognize that God is with us, he's with you. When you've experienced a rejection, when you've experienced the loss of job or bankruptcy or illness or broken relationships, whatever the situation you're in, God is still with you. Lesson two in the difficulty, can we allow him to prune and shape us for his service, that we are more usable to him? In Hebrews 12:6, it says, "He disciplines those he loves." The third point was, when we reach out to others to comfort and encourage, as we go through this, let us be a source of comfort and encouragement. And lastly, may we grow closer to him who loves us and who has prepared a place in glory for each of us. May we recognize that he is the God of now and he is the God of the future, and he wants the best for us. And may we grow closer to him and show our love for him day by day in these times. The Lord bless you.